We're back, session four. So we talked about the more important thing of the character emphasis, but now what do deacons need to do?
Yeah, we're going to look at that today. Yeah, you know, when you look at Scripture, there is no particular job description that says this is what deacons are to do. The implication is you get the right people, and they will figure out what
the
to
need.
Do.
Yes.
And so we're going to look at some of the practical aspects of some churches, our experience, but looking at what should a deacon be thinking about? What should a deacon be looking for within the church, outside the church? What are those things that are the deacon servanthood role that leads the church in the process of being a deacon? So that's what we're going to be looking at. And a word here. And that is, you know, in this, I'm following this book by Matt Smethurst. You know, this is part of a series of books about the church and a variety of things. Anyway, in preparation for this class, I began reading this book again, and so know that the list comes from there. But I do want to make a note before we begin his list, and that is that sometimes the role of deacon can get limited, right? Let's put it that way, can get limited. The church I served in California, I shared that we restructured the office of deacon. And that happened in my heart, saying we've got to do something, because I walked into the church one day, and one of the deacons was on the floor in the sanctuary, and in that sanctuary originally we had pews. And looked like this. And what he was doing was on the floor trying to figure out, because we'd added a hymnal to our repertoire of song choices, and he was looking how he could put another rack under the pew. And the role of deacon, in his understanding, was that deacons were in charge of the church property. And so anything that had to do with the church property, that's what he thought was his responsibility.
Okay.
And so we had a talk, and that's when we decided we've got to change this, because, you know, there are a lot of people within your church, I suspect, who can do building stuff, and some who are very talented and very experienced. We don't get deacons for that. We get deacons to deal with people. And so this is just to try to say what can we do within the church and outside the church that those who have been chosen to be deacons can be setting their minds and hearts on to try to get the idea of what Jesus would do. I guess that's the question. Anytime we meet a need, what would Jesus do?
I think it's such an important note, because, you know, maybe you're watching this and you know that the deacon role in your church is kind of maybe sort of became traditionally this way, and it's kind of, yeah, like you said, become limited and put in this certain box that is not what the role of deacon.
Right. So let us encourage you at the beginning of this session to say we're going to be looking not at that sort of thing, unless you're doing it for somebody else. A deacon may say, there's this need for this person over here. We're going to fix something in their house. That would be legitimate. But taking care of the church building, oh, Lord, please get some people who aren't deacons to do that.
Right, gifted in that area.
Right. Okay, so first of all, here is first duty of the deacon. This is what deacons should do. Spot and meet tangible needs inside the church. This is from James chapter 2. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. That happened back in Acts chapter 6,
right.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead.
So It's a powerful passage. It's one that definitely should make you feel that, like, ooh, to the gut, you know? It's like, it's so easy to say great things, but if you're not having action, then you have a huge symptom of a faith that is dead.
Mm-hmm. So, everybody's called to be a deacon. Mm-hmm. Everybody is. But there are the few who are going to lead the charge. And it starts by looking inside and saying, what are the needs inside the church? Let's just look at some possibilities of what that might be. Okay, we looked at widow connection. So, widows and orphans. What does that look like for widows and orphans within your church? And what are the needs that happen to be there? Of course, supporting families with illness.
Yeah. Right. So many families in a church are going through that in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And support is so critical. That could become financial support for the two that we just said above, or even someone outside of those categories of illness, or, you know, being a widow or orphan. But financial support can be a huge part of that.
Yeah. And usually there is a budget within the church. Mm-hmm. For that, the benevolent fund. Most churches I know of have that sort of fund that the deacons are responsible for using for those kind of things, and that's financial support as well. That sometimes families, a person loses their job, and now what? Right. Now, there are some safety nets here in the United States. I don't know about where you are, but there are some safety nets for people who would lose their job here, but not always.
Yeah.
Is it adequate to meet
sure.
the needs?
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. So how do you do that? And there are a variety of ways. I mean, if you don't have a budget, somebody did a crowdfunding thing and for a need for a family that was experiencing extended illness, and they had to be, we're up in the Grand Haven, Michigan, Spring Lake area, but this guy had to be at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio for a period of a month. And the families, family members were there to support this person during that time, and so, here came this crowdfunding thing to say, would you give to support their living expenses down there for the family? Insurance would do the rest, but for his care, as far as he's in the hospital.
Right, but the family is needing to be down there and be,
Right, and it was a pretty significant fund. They were trying to raise $5,000 for this, and the rest of the family wasn't very large. So I don't know what would happen in this kind of situation. If it were my family, I know that there would be people, true deacons at heart, but there would be the people in the church as well that would come alongside and meet. And I know, the church that I was recently, I did an interim in a church, and they had a broad ministry within their community they had defined the boundaries. This was an inner city church, and so they defined the boundaries, but they took requests from all sorts of people, and they visited and cared for all sorts of people within that community who had financial needs because they just couldn't make it from month to month. Counseling ministry. Wow.
No, again, what a need in so many different areas. Can even become, maybe someone is going through grief, a loss. Maybe they're going through a divorce. That's where those being mentioned as well. Maybe they're dealing with something else, but that opportunity of the church to be able to come alongside them and encourage them with the love and comfort of Christ is, again, such a vital way that a deacon could really be heading up that in their community and inside the church.
Yeah, and again, these are the kind of things that cause the church to grow. Grief Share, the last church I served actively, that was one of the things that we started. It's a program. It's a 15-week program, and we got some people who went and got the training to be leaders in that, and we began to offer that in the community, and funeral directors throughout the community referred people to us who died. And as a result of being there, you know, we had some people become part of our church.
Right. And they go, wow, good. This is such a blessing. This is exactly what I needed. This is the community of believers I want to be a part of.
Right. Absolutely. Divorce Share was another one. Similar, same company put out something, 15-week program for people who had divorced. And then there was a part for the kids who were children of divorce as well. And that one, to me, that was one of our major, I refer to them as growth engines. What's bringing people in? What's bringing people in? Now, the gospel is what you want to present to people. But the fact that we were going to meet needs, and, you know, I remember one woman I talked to who tears said, thank you. She says, the last church, you know, they were harassing her because she was divorced. Her husband had been abusive. And the church she had come from was trying to say to her, you've got to go back to him. Mm. And anyway, she said, and then she visited our church at the invitation of someone. And she said, I was so shocked that you were announcing a program for divorced people.
Yeah, wow. God moment.
Yeah, this is just looking, you know, inside. What are the needs inside and outside the church? We'll talk about that more in a few moments.
Wow. It's impactful. It's like such a strength of, again, and we just see the model from Jesus again and again that his ministry was so this, finding those tangible needs and just completely going all in on loving and caring.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, powerful stuff. And you know, there may be the last church I served as well had a mission to disabled people. They had a group of people that were very good with tools and with wood, and so they went to the city and said, we will build any handicap ramp in the city. And it grew beyond that to the county. But they had they called themselves SWAT, Servants with Appropriate Tools. Yeah. And they would go and they'd build a ramp. And they would sit, you know, and one guy had bits of evangelism who went with them, and he would sit and visit with the people while the ramp was being built. But, you know, it was looking and saying, it started with somebody inside the church who needed a ramp. Somebody couldn't get into his house. He had become disabled. He was dealing with cancer. And they built the ramp. And that said, well, you can do this for other people too. True servant. Servant-hearted people. SWAT. Servants with Appropriate Tools. So inside the church. Deacons are looking for needs inside the church. Who are the people who are in need inside the church that may have consequences outside the church too, but start with inside the church. The second part of that verse is, you know, we're looking, James 1, looking after orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Orphans and widows, of course, again, as I said earlier, no safety net. They were dependent on relatives, and relatives didn't care for them. They were begging in the streets. And who's going to care for these people? So when a deacon comes in, they begin to look outside the church as well. You know, he's not the greatest example anymore, but because, you know, the Crystal Cathedral in Southern California was near where I lived, and I would visit there every once in a while. But Robert Schuller, somebody known for building this church, started as a drive-in church. Went out there as a church planter and couldn't find any space to rent. And so he started a drive-in church. People would come and drive in. And, you know, I know drive-in churches, drive-in theaters are almost gone. But, you know, when I was a kid, you'd go there and you'd put a speaker and you'd watch on the big screen. That's how he started the church, with, you know, a couple dozen people. And it grew to be a church of over 6,000 folks. Now, how did it do that? It's that phrase you find that he made famous. But this is church growth. Find a need and fill it. And he did that. Tell you. Now, what are some ways that you think, okay, what in this community, when you think of this community, what would people find a need here? You know, I've shared some of them, but wow. Just to show you, this is the church that was built as a result of that. So outside the church, what kind of things do we look at? Well, here are some from the last church that I served. Beds for children that don't have beds. Desks during COVID for people that didn't have desks. Widows Connect. Food truck. Car ministry. You know, people can't have a job if they don't have transportation, etc. Let's brainstorm a little bit. Yeah. If we were to look at this community and say, well, what does this community need? I think that right now children are in crisis in the United States in general. I think how
could that need be filled?
Right. How could we find a way to fill that need? And it goes beyond the typical youth ministry within the church.
I think the family as a whole needs to be strengthened. I was listening to a message the other day, and they were just talking a lot about, kids these days spend up to 7 to 9 hours on social media. And it's like, whoa, and then what's a recommended amount is no more than 2 hours being spent on that. And it's like, oh, wow, we're tripling that, beyond tripling that for just the average child in America.
Right, yeah. And I think in a similar vein for elderly people, being one of them, I know that there are a lot of scams that are at work right now. In fact, the big reporting is that if you own a smartphone, you're probably any day getting 6 scam possibilities coming into your inbox. And people are losing their bank accounts and being cheated out. One guy lost his home as a result. Is there a way that we can offer training and support for elderly people? What do you watch for?
Right. What are the red flags?
Right. And how do you check and see is this legitimate or not? And to be a warning way of doing things. One of the unique ministries in the last church I served was, we looked every year at statistics. And so when the census would come out every 10 years, we look again and say, wow, what's this look like? And one of the things we found out, because we had within the church developed a ministry for children with disabilities, we found that only 7% of families with children with disabilities within our area of Ottawa County, which is the county we live in, attended church. Mm-hmm. Why? Because when they'd come to church with their disabled child, my daughter works in this, she says, you can't say disabled child, child with a disability. They didn't know what to do with the kid. And so we thought, we can expand that.
Right, there's a need here, and we can fill it by getting a ministry that is equipped to serve the families in that.
Right. And this became, growth engine. That program was our most effective growth engine for the church for years. And I remember the day we were doing communion and we were doing it, having people come up individually to elders and pastors. And one man came up to me and, I gave him the bread and then the juice, and he grabbed my hand and said, Pastor Bruce, he said, this is the first day my entire family has been in church since so-and-so was born. And, he was overcome emotionally that this was a place he could be.
Right, and feel that love and unity and acceptance.
And knew that his child, which wasn't a child with need, was being cared by one-on-one with a volunteer in rooms that were built for children with disabilities. And we've expanded that to our young adults with the developmental disabilities, etc. And like I say, what happens? We become the arm of Jesus Christ And
right, and reach into the community mm-hmm. in an area that, again, there is a need that needs to be filled.
Yeah, so here's an overwhelming kind of diagram for you. For what should the deacon be thinking about? If you look at the center, start with your church members. Next, your immediate community. Next, your region. And then finally, the world. One brilliant man who I'll make reference to later was on our missions team who make decisions about our missions budget. Every year we did a commitment of money to certain missions projects, and that particular year the pledges had tripled, and so we're sitting there thinking, what are we going to do with this? And he said, you got to have it's kind of like making your stock portfolio. You make it, okay, some goes to this, some goes to this, some goes to this, but then we got this missionary that does this, we got this, and we built a portfolio of help, starting with the church. So all of that is, we started by saying, what does a deacon do? A deacon meets needs inside the church, is looking inside the church, as well as looking outside the church. But I think there's another role for the deacon, and that is protect and promote unity in the church.
Yeah, just going back to that original deacons being instilled, it was to really protect and promote that unity. And so filling these needs keeps the body of Christ working the way that it's intended to work.
Yeah. And, what does that mean? I hesitate to tell this story because it's ugly, but I was in the system of church government in which we work. There are regional churches are gathered together, and then there's national and international church denomination meetings. But within the regional church, a church decided that it was time for the pastor to go. And as part of that process for us, that pastor gets an advocate, and I was asked to be that pastor's advocate in the process by which he is separated from his church. And it was incredibly striking to me as I got to know him and got to know the church, that as they were choosing, they were in a system there where they elected their elders and deacons. In other words, the congregation voted on whether this person or that person. One person campaigned for the position of elder with the stated purpose of getting rid of the pastor.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, that's rather contrary. There had been some murmuring in the church, and rather than dealing with it positively, they...
And that's the fraught that happens with the murmuring and that, the creeping of division, and sometimes something comes up that seems like a good response to the murmuring, but it is.
Right.
It's not.
Yeah, and so, deacons can be people who come alongside complainers, even. not a great role, and probably one you need training for to do it well. And we're going to talk about that later in the future sessions. But to be people who are dealing with the murmuring by saying, how can we address the problems? And not how can we stir up and divide people.
Murmuring. I'm sure there was a lot of people that did not maybe agree with the decision either.
Oh, yeah. It was messy. And that church is half the size it was. Anyway, enough said on that. So, protecting and promoting unity. Another one is supporting and serving the ministry of the elders and pastor. Our pastors in the United States are in a bad position. You'll notice 65% of pastors were experiencing burnout in 2017. That's before the pandemic.
Mm.
Now, after the pandemic, 42% are seriously considering leaving full-time ministry altogether due to various stresses associated with their role. George Barna is a well-known researcher in Christian stuff.
Mm.
Wow, you grew up in a pastor's family.
Yeah.
Did you ever see your father saying, there's got to be something else I can
exactly.
do?
Exactly. Oh, no, definitely. I think that, looking at that about 50%, and unfortunately, that doesn't surprise me because there is so much that's being demanded of a pastor, and that mm-hmm. can keep expanding and expanding till the point of, again, that burnout and that, break, you know? And I think one of the things my dad did model well was he was a delegator, and I think that's really important that you can see, hey, here's someone who's gifted in this. I need to stop, one-on-one doing this counseling thing when I mm-hmm. should delegate it here. And I think that was a huge way that I saw him modeling the kind of way to, combat that burnout. And that's exactly what's being said here, is to support and serve the ministry of the elders and pastors. And even goes back to that, original passage that we were looking at, where it's like, again, we need to keep our focus as the apostles, mm-hmm. and we need to instate people that are trustworthy mm-hmm. and, full of the Spirit to serve in this area that needs to be addressed for the unity of the church.
Yeah. I recently wrote a man who was chairman of our council in California. Finally got his email address from somebody who knew him well yet. And I told him about a time. There was a time when our church was growing and we were trying to figure out what to do, and we decided that we were going to relocate and build a church with a 1,500-seat sanctuary, and it was going to end up costing millions and millions of dollars that we had to raise from the church. And we went through a 6.5 period that were just challenging, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And as the point leader, I got a lot of arrows thrown my way. I remember this man chaired the council, and I went to him and I said, I will be gone within 1 year unless you do something. I would get unsigned letters, very unchristian kind of activities, telephone calls, being accused of trying to build my own kingdom, not God's kingdom, and et cetera. And I said, it's in your ball court. I said, but if this continues, I will not continue this. And we came to the next elders meeting, and I can talk about this without crying now, but he said, I talked to Pastor Bruce, he said, and he talked to me and my partner, I had a primary partner there, and he said, we know things have been hard for you. He says, we are here tonight to do two things. One, we're recommissioning you as our pastors. You are going to be our pastors. And two, you are no longer to deal with this stuff. Two elders, we've appointed two elders. If you get a phone call, you say, don't talk to me, talk to this person. Mm-hmm. If you get a letter, don't open it, you give it to this person. A letter that's not with a return address.
Wow.
And so I was reflecting on ministry, and I wrote him an email. I said, you'll never know what that night meant to me. Mm-hmm. You'll never know. That saved me for ministry.
Right, and saved you from having that burnout where you just go, like the survey that we just looked at, you didn't become part of the 42% that was ready to leave because somebody was really willing to take action and support your ministry.
Yeah. Well, he responded graciously. He said, I don't remember that. He had no recollection of it. Because that was his heart. He was a servant. He was a servant, right? He was a servant, and part of his role was to say, okay, I'm in an official role in the church, and it has to do with you.
Yeah.
With you. Oh, we've gotten long in this session. I just looked at
important,
the clock.
Important stuff.
So, just to say, teaching, leading, ministry, support, coming alongside complainers, listening to them, prayer support for the leaders. These are what deacons should do. So stay tuned next time as we continue looking at this office of deacon and the power it has for the church.